Upper limits are the perceived inner limit based on your lived experience, which is really important with trauma work. What is your relationship with peace? And can you stabilize at the new level? Of course, I want more money. Like, what could be safer than having more money? Not if you identify with the person that has been chasing it. Now we got to neutralize. We got to normalize this in the body, this new level. Otherwise, it's going to feel like, oh my gosh, too good to be true. And what do we do with too good to be true? We sabotage it because on some level, we feel unsafe with it. People mistake and conflate that with worthiness. It's not necessarily a worthiness thing. It's a safety thing.
What if you could build a business in the modern world as big or as small as you want without having to compromise the things that were the most important to you in the very beginning? This is the Wealthy Consultant Talks podcast with Taylor Welch and Mike Walker, as they share with you today their learning lessons from stories and their experiences over the past 10 to 15 years and share with you right here, right now. Let's get into it.
All right. What is going on, my friends? Mike Walker here. Welcome to another episode of the Wealthy Consultant Podcast. I am excited because I have a very special guest to bring to the table today. Somebody that I have known for a little while now, but who has been, unbeknownst to me, way deep on the inside. Like, she's got all kinds of connections inside of the Wealthy Consultant that I wasn't even aware of until we started talking. So it's kind of a cool thing. But I'd like to introduce Carrie Ford. She is the CEO of Elevate with Carrie, and a three-time award-winning advisor to high-profile, high-net-worth women. She blends nervous system science with advanced leadership strategy. Carrie, thank you so much for joining me today. I am super excited to dive into everything that is your world because I know people need it in particular right now. So why don't you kind of expand on that little bio? I know it goes way beyond that. So take us a little bit further into your world. I'm excited.
Yeah. So I knew that there was something to, you know, the inner world and the belief systems that we get to step into the identity shift of who we be before our external changes. But, you know, first it started with embodiment and sort of the practices around that. And then as I dove deeper into personal development, I discovered somatic work. And I was like, what the heck is this? I mean, it's hard to really find what you're looking for when you don't know the name of it. Mm. And so I became trauma trained as a practitioner because this to me was the key that I think so many people in high levels of leadership need. And quite honestly, like, nobody was doing this kind of work in that space. They weren't applying somatic work and the nervous system, the felt sense experience and all of that into that world. And so 3 years ago, trademarked Somatic Success Method as a way to blend both the external success on paper, right? The money, the influence, the visionary, everything in with the trauma trained modalities. And I think that's a huge missing piece where people that are at the top have invisible stresses and weight and, you know, need to prioritize mental health. Otherwise they're taking like long sabbaticals with an unknown period of, you know, time that they end it. And to me, this is just such a huge, huge part of that. So anyway, it's a little bit of a, I kind of stumbled into it, but it's such a huge part of leadership. I was like, this has to be talked about. Like, why is this not part of it yet?
Amazing. So, yeah. And you said something, a key word there, like this unseen elements. So would this be that proverbial glass ceiling that people seem to hit on their way up the ladder of success, where they just keep feeling like, man, I just can't seem to break through to the next level. I just get stuck here. Are these the types of unseen, even potentially unfelt things that are keeping people back? Or where are you seeing this, your work, make the biggest impact that really unlocks for people?
I see it in two ways. One is as they approach that new upper limit, the inner thermostat. I love the book by Gay Hendricks, The Big Leap, except I add in the somatic component, like what's happening in the body as we claim a new level, as we get closer to breaking through those beliefs and barriers that are invisible. You know, upper limits are the perceived inner limit, right? Based on your lived experience, which is really important with trauma work, because trauma that's unresolved, old business trauma, old belief systems that accompany those things, those are all acquired through your experience. But then how do you change that? You have to change the inner thermostat, what it perceives as safe or unsafe. So it's that comes up as we approach a new level. So yes, some people might experience that as stuck, can't see my way around this wall, can't figure it out, can't seem to outperform my limiting beliefs. Yes, very real. Then there's the other side of that. What happens as you just go past that new upper limit, right? What feels safe to keep? And we see this a lot with people that have new money, meaning they're the first person in their generation and their family to come into money, to make money. And first the conversation starts as, can I do this? Mm-hmm. And then it turns into, I've done it. Now I'm in a new tax bracket and I've got all these other problems, right? All these other leadership challenges that come with new evolved issues into higher leadership, more overhead, and keeping it is really a whole other thing. I don't know if you've read The Psychology of Money.
Yeah.
Have you read that book?
Mm-hmm.
It talks about keeping it, right?
Totally.
And so a lot of that has to do with, again, the identity shift and being the person now that feels safe with stability. If you knew chaos growing up, for example, talking about past experiences and trauma, you're going to unconsciously create chaos, even when you have the thing that you have set out to achieve, can only override the nervous system for so long.
I totally see that a lot. You know, members coming into Chamber in particular, you know, our highest tier consultancy people come in. And obviously at that point, they're already by most general standards considered successful. You know, they're doing well, they're trending well at the very least. And they almost without fail will have these elements of things from their past holding them back. And yet they seem to just keep looping on them. Like they basically get stuck in that mode of survival where that's, they've normalized it. They've normalized that feeling of urgency, of scarcity. So when we start to get them out of it, like you said, it's one thing to get it. It's another thing to keep it. And that's one of the first conversations we typically have as people generate, you know, new levels within the training and curriculum and support that we provide here, is that we're like, hey, just so you know, when you get to the top of the mountain, you're going to have to get used to a different level of oxygen or lack thereof, depending on how you want to look at it. And you got to normalize that. And it's okay to realize that, wow, this feels very foreign, to not be freaking out, not to be going, you know, the proverbial paycheck to paycheck scenario or whatever. And so that's a big piece. And I know you must spend, I would imagine, you tell me if I'm wrong, but I would imagine you probably spend quite a bit of time with that on that particular topic with people, right? Is like figuring out how to get away from what they've normalized in the past so that they can actually truly keep the new levels that they're achieving as they go.
Yeah, it's really about rewiring their nervous system for new patterns of stability. Because if they know chaos, if they know the dopamine drive, as I call it, trauma drive, which is like constantly putting themselves, let's say, in positions where their back is against the wall that they need to outperform or override their way out of, that is, it has a payoff, right? There's adrenaline, there's a dopamine hit to that. It's a survival mechanism though, when you really look under the hood. And so, yeah, how do we rewire that so that you don't constantly do that just at higher levels with more money? It's a lot riskier. And there's a lot more money on the line, and there's a lot more people affected at higher levels of wealth. You know, if you're even up to, you know, 10 million, I would consider like a small business, but still that could be a very costly mistake.
Yeah. You could blow some stuff up with that for sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And I see it every time they hit a new level of stability or achievement, because it's not a matter of like, if they'll hit their goals, they will, they'll figure it out. That's, they're doers, they're achievers, they're fast integrators and implementers. But what is your relationship with peace? And can you stabilize at the new level, right? Before you like open another loop. And that's what you're referring to, the psychosomatic loop that their body knows, even though we might say like, well, that's so stupid. Like, of course I want more money. Like, what could be safer than having more money? Not if you identify with the person that has been chasing it. Not if you identify with the struggle or the dopamine drive of that. And so, yeah, stabilizing is a huge part of the mental game that a lot of people, I think, discount. The first thing I say to clients when they achieve a new goal, neutralize. Now we got to neutralize. We got to normalize this in the body, this new level. Otherwise, it's going to feel like, oh my gosh, too good to be true. And what do we do with too good to be true? We sabotage it because on some level, we feel unsafe with it. People mistake and conflate that with worthiness. It's not necessarily a worthiness thing. It's a safety thing.
Amazing. I think we should go there. Like with all these, you know, episodes, I always try to make sure that within a 15 to 20 minute period of time that our listeners and viewers have a takeaway, you know, something that they can immediately apply into their life or business. And I feel like what you were just highlighting there is neutralizing, stabilizing Is there a small, I mean, granted, your work goes really, really deep, so I know we're confined by time, but is there anything that we could maybe dig into there that would help our audience here, like immediately apply into their life and business?
Yeah. So if you can think of a time where looking back in hindsight, you're like, oh my gosh, I 100% sabotaged. Just, it could be a relationship, could be a monetary gain, could have been a new goal, a visibility, whatever. Just think about it. Everyone has one. They're like, oh man, I totally sabotaged that. Mm-hmm. Now take it a step deeper. What indicates inside your body that that was sabotage? How does that feel? Like, ugh, I feel this pit in my stomach. It's heavy. Where do you feel it? Okay. In my chest, in my stomach. I feel like my throat is clenching up. Those are often, usually it's like contraction or heaviness that people often say. So feel that. And now that you have a little somatic information, you'll know the next time it starts to creep in, like, and you'll save yourself some time because you're like, oh, there's that feeling. I know that feeling. This is what it feels like when I sabotage.
Okay.
It's contracting. It's heavy. It's in my gut, right? So that's information for sabotage. On the other side, now think of a goal that you have achieved, that you have normalized, that you have kept, or something that you're, you know, that you've accomplished. Could be a new level of money and income. Could be that one healthy love and relationship, you know, new levels of intimacy that you've been craving. Think about that and think about how that feels to just have as a constant, right, in your life. It's there, it's here, it's right now. How does that feel? Probably feels warm or open or expansive or peaceful, or maybe it feels like nothing at all, which is kind of cool because it's neutral.
Yes. I was just going there. It feels neutral. Like, well, I just expect it now. Like that's what
exactly.
It is.
It's truth. It's like saying, you know, the sky is blue. It's fact. So feel that neutrality, feel that inside, feel the location of it. With somatic work, it's always about the felt sense experience. And if there's any Neville Goddard fans who I'm a huge fan of, and I listen to him all the time, he talks about, don't just say robotic affirmations, truly feel them. Like feel that that's the truth. So feel the neutrality of that and feel what that feels like. So that's how you know, that you've really shifted an identity and you get to like keep this new level. Not to say that things won't happen, but the number one thing that most successful people trust themselves with the most is I can always make money. And like, that's like, even guys that are like, ah, you know, I've lost $30 million or I'm, you know, whatever. You see it on the, what is that show? The ABC's Secret Millionaire, or people that get interviewed on the streets. Hold it's that. Like, if you lost everything tomorrow, do you think you can make it back? They never skip a beat. They always say, without a doubt, I can make it back.
Yes. Yep. In fact, I even often talk to clients about that, that are going through financial things or in the extreme situations where they have just, you know, things blew up on them. Mm-hmm. I just share the story of in over, you know, 2.5 decades of business development experience on my, you know, through my own journey, I've ridden that roller coaster, the ups and downs and all the things and having things, you know, go sideways on me financially. And I often look back at those things and actually anchor to them as like, hey, this is proof positive that I'm not scared to not have money again. I know without a question of a doubt that I can go get that again, just mm-hmm. rebuild, you know, and that confidence makes you feel pretty much bulletproof to make really bold decisions when other people are just, you know, white knuckled to the what ifs and the, we can't risk too much type attitude. Mm-hmm. Like, nah, we'll just go build it if we have to. I mean, don't be reckless, but it also gives you that bravado that I think is sometimes required to make big moves in the market or in your space.
Yeah. There's also a question that's coming to mind, kind of ringing between my ears as we talk about this, that I think could be important for more of my cognitive thinkers on the show. And that is, what part of me doesn't want this to work? And that will reveal a lot about your current beliefs, because we don't get what we want. We get who we are, right? Mm-hmm. And if we want to know what we believe, we just look at our results. It'll reveal all of your beliefs. So what part of you doesn't want this to work? And right. I'll ask myself that question when I feel stuck, if I'm hitting a wall over and over again, I feel like I can't figure it out, quote unquote. And that will always reveal kind of a deeper level of feeling a lack of safety within myself.
Amazing.
Ooh, there's a gem to rewire, you know?
Right. So I feel like with your level of expertise in this area, do you kind of look at people and every interaction that you have, clients specifically, I would say, but pretty much anybody you run into, I'd imagine. Do you kind of feel like you're looking through the matrix a little bit? Cause you can pick up on all kinds of little nuances and stuff. Whenever I meet people that, you know, subject matter experts that are either like body language experts or, you know, they're super deep into NLP or whatever, I just feel like they're like seeing code in front of their eyes. You know what I mean? Is there anything like that for you where you're like reading between the lines so much that most people just don't see or hear?
Yeah. Taylor and I were talking about this at the Mixer at one of the last events. And he was like, you just like see things differently. Like I can feel that from you. And it freaks some people out and I have to be mindful. Like they're like, I feel like you look through my soul when you make eye contact.
Yeah.
You are listening and seeing and hearing me. And I am naturally very intuitive, but I'm also trained to listen, but I have to also be mindful, where there isn't permission, right? From somebody that it's kind of like people that tap into energetic fields. I don't have permission to track their nervous system. We haven't gone into that agreement. So I'm not going to like slide into that necessarily. Mm-hmm. Can I feel things? And is my nervous system very, very attuned and trained at this point to just trust my intuition without proof with my eyes? Absolutely. Can I hear the breath between lines? Yes. But do I have permission to track somebody's nervous system and really like... basically process them? No, like not unless I have a contract with them. And that is the dynamic we're stepping into because it feels invasive otherwise.
Yeah.
Right. It's not really fair for me to use that training, I think. But yeah, you don't want to like NLP people into sales, for example, you know?
That's right. Yeah, totally. I totally get it. No, that makes sense. The, now you know, even the bio that we read as we opened, you specifically focus on, you know, successful women. Now, obviously your expertise extends beyond women and men too. So what was the choice there to focus on women and for the men out there, how should we think through what it is that you do and where would we go to really tap into the insights that someone like yourself can provide?
Yeah. I think we're at a really unique crossroad with the modern day woman. We've never been here before. In many ways, we're writing this new blueprint, and it's almost like a polarizing topic to talk about motherhood and working because people have so many different views on it. I have never desired to be a stay-at-home mom. I've got two kids. It's just not for me. I feel like, yes, my purpose is in helping raise the next generation and make them good humans and, you know, inspire them and expose them to lots of different things. And at the same time, my purpose is with the work that I do with grown-up adult women. Now, I actually had this realization at one of the events I was at where Apostle Issy spoke. And she said, you know, as the mother of nations, she doesn't think of herself as the mother of nations. She thinks of herself as places she's needed. And that's exactly why I work with the women I work with, because they have high impact and influence already. And most people, you know, their work is they're called to work with volume in terms of number of people. I feel I'm really called to work with a specific type of woman who has access to those volumes of people, but the work that we do infiltrates down and through her. Right. So as she parents, as she leads, as she creates, as she builds, that's where the work kind of scales for me. And it just feels really important because we don't really have advisory or counsel at that level doing what I do in the way that I do it. Like not people are not talking about the mental health advocacy and emergency we really have in this country, the duality and the expectations that are, they're contradictory, right? As a working mother, like you should not be expected to do it all because we're comparing it maybe to a former blueprint. And I think that we are the blueprint creators right now, right? And it's a really beautiful opportunity, but it doesn't come without confusion and lostness and invisible weight. And I don't think a lot of people even know how to speak to that. So me as a mother and as a former corporate leader and an entrepreneur, you know, I feel very, very much like I have walked this living and embodied leadership and kind of learned how to let go of the old blueprint of feminine leadership and step into how we get to purpose that. And of course it affects our men because what happens is it can shift the dynamic with if they're the high earner in the household now, or if the husband works for them, isn't on their payroll.
Right.
They've retired their husband. So how do we restore and maintain polarity where the woman is also now the provider and the nurturer and maybe also the default parent? Ooh, that's a lot, right? That's a lot of silent stress. And in many ways, most people don't really know how to speak to that.
Wow. Yeah, that's heavy. That's really, really cool. So yeah, your work is definitely a force multiplier. You get to the people that have those networks. And so it's a trickle down effect of what you can teach. And then obviously that impacts their existing networks and stuff. I love that. Yeah. Super cool. So two things as we wind down here. One, I know you do fantastic events. I've seen your content on social. We'll make sure your social links are below this video on YouTube in particular. Tell us a little bit about events, because events are experiential. And I think the person to person, what we're calling F to F, face to face environment, is only going to become more and more imperative as we go more AI, robotic, the whole thing. So
yeah,
talk to me a little bit about events and just kind of share what it is that you do. Cause I see the energy and the vibe that you create. It's pretty amazing for any woman out there in particular that's looking to surround herself with some really top level professionals. They definitely got to tune into what it is that you're doing with those live events.
Yeah. I mean, to your point about AI, I'm always asking myself the question, okay, if everyone is doing this, what can I do the opposite of? Because that's where I'm going to create my niche, or that's where I'm going to zag when everyone else is zigging. And so the market strategy just becomes whatever the masses are doing, we're going to be anti. So it's not that we're not leveraging AI. I certainly do that. I will write, you know, the draft of a newsletter and the intention and thought behind it. And I'm training AI to speak like me and think like me. But, you know, I still really love the art of writing, and it's great practice for your brain. In fact, a new study just came out that ChatGPT users are literally getting dumber.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, outsourcing your intelligence and your
growth. Absolutely. Yeah. The critical thinking, right? Our this brain, this body is like such a priority, right? To take care of. It is the business, right? And so I can't ever see a future where nervous system work and connection and face-to-face in person goes away. In fact, I think it'll become more of a commodity. I think it'll be the gold of the future, because people are going to be so, I mean, look at it. We have our phones everywhere that we are, right? We are so versed in social media and online skills and now getting into AI, which is a huge opportunity, but let's not lose ourselves to that completely. We have to maintain critical thinking. We have to maintain connection. And so it's not just a business decision, but I think it's what women need the most. People need connection. I mean, we see this post-pandemic, and for a period of time, I was writing about the mental health crisis in the United States and the pandemic hangover, which I don't think people have recovered from.
Yeah, I agree.
Have you noticed this, Mike, where people now even stand further away from each other because of the 6-foot social distancing that was rewired in our bodies?
Wow.
Safe. So I noticed that I might lean in and someone might stand back, right? Maybe it's about their personal space and how they feel safe, but I've just noticed across the board, people seem to stand a little further apart, right? People go out a little less. We've got self-checkout. There are way less opportunities to connect than there are to, you know, be in person. So I just think it's not only a smart business decision and strategy, but it's something we need on an inherent deep level. How can we not? We are beings with a sensory experience. Like, we're meant to connect. We're biologically wired for it.
That's right. No, 100%. I mean, we speak to that all the time. In fact, Taylor and I are meeting later this week about events for 2026 and how, you know, we've already leaned into those pretty hard, where we're doing, you know, essentially at least one event per month for the different tiers and programs that we do. And that's only going to continue. The emphasis around that's only going to continue just because it has to, you know, like we humans are going to crave that more and more. And those that become numb to their need for it, I think, are in real danger, because they're just going to kind of like, drift away, and you're not going to have that proximity, that high touch proximity and frequency that you can gain by, you know, face to face, hand, you know, shaking hands, giving hugs, all the things. That energetic transfer is just probably more imperative than I think most people realize. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people are going to pigeon so hard the other way to where they just exist in their little office on Zoom and through social media. And you can definitely see that happening already in our younger generations too, where they're just so inefficient when it comes to a face-to-face meeting or shaking hands even. It's like, man, this is crazy. Like, we're going to have to really address these inefficiencies that they have when it comes to the person-to-person dynamic.
Yeah, I'm strongly concerned for the upcoming generations, because if people already feel lonely and isolated, I mean, liquor sales went through the roof during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
That's an indication of what already exists beneath the hood. Then you couple that with removing connection, and now connection is wired as dangerous. And I don't think people have fully recovered from that. Also, yeah. Systems that we never questioned started to be questioned, like school systems. Like, my kids were on Zoom. There is a certain level of uncertainty and instability that's still kind of humming beneath the surface because of the pandemic. And I don't think that as a collective that has been healed and worked through yet. And that level of uncertainty is still beneath the surface. Like, so many people I talk to, however much success and stability they seem to have on paper, they feel like 2 seconds away from like literally having a mental breakdown.
Mm.
We're carrying so much.
Yeah. So let's go there as we wrap up then, because I know this was a key word that you and I kind of zeroed in on prior to hopping on here, which was resilience.
Mm.
By the nature of both your profession and mine, we are exposed to a pretty wide range of people. And a lot of them, I'd say the majority, would be considered on the higher performance, you know, the people that should have it all together and kind of figured it out. And yet we are seeing more and more that these people are definitely feeling it. So maybe let's talk a little bit about resilience, and let's define that. And then kind of we'll end with any takeaways that you'd like to provide as it pertains to what you're seeing and feeling out there.
Yeah. Continue to put yourself in the rooms where you can normalize the stress. Right. And also get support for the mental health component to release it. Right. When we do capacity building, that is not necessarily so that you can just handle doing more and add to your to-do list. It's to handle what you do already better and to feel good about it. Like, to feel like you got what you needed to get done and you can be present with your family. To know that you gave it your all today and that was more than enough, and to feel like content with that. Right? To feel fulfilled, to feel joy again, to feel connected to yourself and to other people. And, you know, resilience is certainly part of that, because at a certain point, the cup of stress gets so full and then it starts to overflow. And then from what well are you giving and serving? And then you get burned out. And so my mission is to keep more people, more powerful people, in the seat of power, right? And the way that we do that is through resilience. Not just so that you can handle more, like I said, but to handle what you're doing better.
Love that. Love that. Amazing. Okay. So where do people learn more about you? Where can they follow you and all those things? We'll put your links below, but for those that are just listening, where can they learn more about you and what you do?
Yeah. Elevate with Carrie, KERI.com, pretty much has everything from our Champagne Club dinner events that are like, you know, private networking, to our Millionaire Mental Health Network that we just started, which is just like a nervous system reset we do once a month for people that feel kind of taxed for time, but know they need this work, and all the in between. So
amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Well, Carrie, thank you for joining me today. I know the what you bring to the world is so needed, obviously. And I'd say, I don't want to say unfortunately, but the reality is that it's going to become more and more needed too. So just like what we were talking about. So you're definitely a gift to the world, and thank you for sharing with our audience here.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate the conversation.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, guys. Thanks so much for joining us. As always, like, subscribe, follow, share, all the things. You know what to do if you feel like it. But hey, thank you for joining us. We have a lot of really good stuff coming as we get into the second half of the year here. So regardless of whether this finds you in real time or as a replay from the past, just know that we're here for you. Check out thewealthyconsultant.com for more information, how to learn more about what we do, and connecting with great human beings such as Carrie here as well. All right. Thanks, guys. Have a blessed week, and we will see you on another episode soon. Take care.